Hello, Jeha. Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Sure. Twitter, I think, and then we reconnected based on some shamanic practice trainings. We recorded this conversation together in January 2022, so I'm sure that there's a few things that would have changed for both of us, but for me, honesty and integrity, truth and knowledge and wisdom really shines through. I have always found her story to be moving in many ways.
Simone is an embodiment of the courage it takes to speak truth after violence and a history of trauma and the spiraling path of recovery. Simone is the survivor of a brutal attack in 2003 in Aotearoa, New Zealand, where her former partner assaulted her with a samurai sword, severing both hands, and she had to go through many surgeries and heal from that relationship, but also many things in her life. This story is one that's deeply inspiring. Although we don't talk directly about the attack, we talk more on her path with flairescences and how that has helped her recovery. I would definitely recommend the book, but again, mentioning that it's intense as well. Please enjoy this episode.
I've been trying to find a word to describe the sentiment or the feeling that I get when I'm around someone and her energy, and I can't quite find it, but I hope that you feel it through her journey, her sharing, her openness, her willingness to be so transparent and honest and open about what she's been through. I think a lot of us can learn from that. I know that there's lots of things I've been through in my life that I have no idea how to share or haven't processed, and don't underestimate the power and the behind the scenes work that it goes to write a book like this, to expose some of the shit that's happened to you, because you go through a huge journey to share your truth. Sharing our truth is not an easy thing. When you see people out there who are sharing their story or their wisdom in any way being willing to be seen, it's not easy. So, man, I just adore this woman, and I deeply hope that you benefit from our conversation together. Ngā mihi nui, many blessings.
We are talking with the beautiful Simone Butler, and this kōrero miri miri is really special for me. I feel like we've been connected for a long time in the non-physical, in a way. Also, in my journey has been connected to yours in different ways. At touch points, we have these connections. And when I was tapping in this morning, looking actually at the blurb of your book that you've written, this beautiful double-edged sword, and it said that the experiences you went through happened in 2003, which was the same year that my experiences happened. So that just gave me a deep tingle that some of the journey. So Simone is a medicine woman who walks the shamanic path, helps many different people, uses flower essences, card readings, drawing on different energies in nature, but also her own experience to hold space for people. For me, some of those who are the most powerful in their work are those who have had the lived experience and really know from an internal perspective of their own healing. And so in 2003, Simone Butler's violent partner, high on methamphetamine, cut off both her hands with a samurai sword. And I can't even imagine what that experience would be like from my experience. But reading this book for me was really raw, and it brought up a lot of things, that sort of relationship between power and not having power and who we are as women and the strength we know now. But when you sometimes it's like I think of my experiences in the past and I can't even conceptualize. So I'm really excited to, don't know if excited is the right word, but excited to hear from you of your journey on that aspect. And also another reason that prior to even connecting with you, it was, I think it was on Twitter at the time, when I was involved with the Read My Lips, but then I saw you did shamanic work as well. And so I was like, this woman, I really feel connected to her. So for me, part of the reason, and I haven't spoken about this for a really long time, but I was also raped in 2003. And when I found you, it was when I was for the first time sort of sharing publicly about my experience and working through that healing aspect. And the campaign I was involved with was called Read My Lips. It's a really beautiful campaign that happens every April. I'm not so much involved with that now because I feel like that part of my healing was more, that reclaiming power, stamping the stake in the ground and drop back into a different space with it now, clearing out some of my own things. The point of all that is to say, your book is deeply touching, but definitely we say trigger warning for this episode, but also for the book, I would say too. I had to take my time reading it and pick it up and put it down at different points just to process through the things that were in there. So it's a gift in that way. So please, I would love to hear just what comes forth for you to share about your own experience or anything I've said in the first instance.
Well, for me, writing the book was actually really, really cathartic. It was made out of 17 years worth of journals, and the writing process was how I got my head back together. I also learned all of these other modalities to help myself heal, but being able to go through the journals and look and see where I'd been and identify my patterns and that sort of thing, that was the kind of gold that came out of writing the book for me. I didn't realize how cathartic it would be. I also didn't realize how destroying it would be later in the aftermath of the process. But I'm glad, because I may not have done it if I had have known. But like you said at the beginning, when you were on your reclamation journey with Read My Lips, that was telling this story wasn't so much about me saying, oh, hey, look, here I am and this happened to me. It was more so I could show people that they're not alone. It was more so that I could show people that you can be raw and vulnerable and heal. It was such a huge process, and I had the most amazing co-writer with me. Like, we literally sat cross-legged on my bed or on her lounge suite for a year, working through my journals. She was really pivotal in being able to pull it into a narrative, because, I didn't have the writing skills. Like, I am a writer and I write all the time, but I didn't have any technical writing skills. And she's a qualified teacher, English teacher, media studies. She's also a stand-up comedian, which made it really good, because I think I'm hilarious too. And so even though it's full of such heavy, painful, raw trauma, we also tried to keep it light in some places. And we also, like you said, it took a while for you to get through. We were very conscious that a lot of it was so heavy and so triggering that we tried to write it in really little blocks. So you'll see some of the chapters in it are actually only half a page long or all 3 pages long, so that people could just take it in snippets. One of the things that has been most rewarding for me is having women message me and tell me that I put into words everything that they couldn't, that they have been looking for a way to articulate and express themselves, or to find the language that they needed for the abuse that they'd experienced. Then reading my book helped them find out what they needed, helped them identify places where they needed healing, because that's what triggers are for us. They are these things that identify these areas that we need healing. And as you acknowledge, my book does come with a content warning on it. There is sexual violence, there's animal violence, there's family violence, there is child abuse, there's neglect, emotional violence, coercive control. And I think we don't talk about these things. When I was growing up, I come from a very long line of amazing, strong women, but we also have a lot of trauma and a lot of abuse in our past. And they've overcome it, but they've had addictions and they've had pain and they've had all of this stuff and they've just kept going. And so I really wanted to be able to tell my story so honestly, because when I was growing up, you weren't allowed to talk about what went on behind closed doors. Tell them nothing, take them nowhere was what I was brought up on. Shame. You know, like my mum was just raised in this total shame where you, what would the neighbours think? And you don't air your dirty laundry in public. And same with my nana as well. So these women suffered in silence with their own pain and their own trauma. And they never reached out for help because they had a stiff upper lip. They were British. They were both born in Britain. My nana was born in Ireland, but my mum was born in Britain, in England. And they had to sit with their pain because they couldn't talk about it. And it wasn't even frowned upon. I mean, domestic violence wasn't even illegal. Rape wasn't even illegal back then. So part of the reason that I really wanted to tell the story is to encourage others to stand up, to encourage others to identify what's going on with them. You know, this isn't about blaming anybody. This is just about opening up to healing. And we can't open up to healing unless we really look at where we've been.
I really want to acknowledge all you spoke of. And also the piece, what I found, what was the triggering aspect to me, it was so in the moment. Sometimes you read things and you can feel that they're talking about their past and they've had some time to conceptualize it and think through, but it was so in the moment. And that was quite like, whoa, you were in it with you and walking alongside you. And it was like, yeah, that moves me a lot. But the piece I want to touch on, I've written a few things down to go off on tangent. And I already, before I was typing it, I was like, we could go in so many directions.
I know, I think we could do like three. Like,
we should actually do this. But the piece that I'm curious about for my own aspect is understanding about with your family when you're telling these stories, how you hold that in for other people who may be navigating their healing. When you're in that space of sort of picking apart all of the different pieces and what your history is, but also holding your family or other loved ones in that, is there any thoughts on that you would have?
It was really hard. My mum did not want me to write it. She's really proud now. She did not want me to tell family stories. Some of my aunties didn't want to. One of my aunties that's passed was very vocal to me about how I was going to ruin our entire family. Her and my mum were very anti it. So I actually told my mum, you're not even in it. Just about violence and healing. It's just about my journey through that relationship and stuff. And for a while, it sort of was. But then there was just so much that I had to keep going and things. But I was very light on my mum. Like, she did the best that she could with what she had. I am so grateful to all of the lessons that she taught me and for the strength and the optimism that she has shown me for her while I was writing it, because she was living with me for the last 2 years. In fact, she was living with me when it came out in the woods. I threw her out in the last phases of publishing. I had to weigh up that it was going to have a lot of impact on some people and possibly a negative impact, because there are other people that are affected by my story and have been part of my journey. I just tried to be as respectful as possible. I tried really hard to not get anyone arrested. And I tried really hard to be really mindful of me just telling my story. These are my experiences. Everyone else that may have been there would have experienced things differently. But this is just from where I sat, how my experiences unfolded for me. There were a lot of flowery senses that really got me to the point where I felt comfortable enough to be able to speak my truth. And I felt comfortable enough to go, I am what I am. Like, this is who I am. And this is my journey. And it doesn't matter about what anyone else thinks, because what I have to say is actually really important. And the people that need it will get it. The people that don't get it, they're not my people. Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah. And I think it's part of, in a way, becoming an adult as well, is like going, we can't please everyone. And some people
just... And I tried so hard. For so many years, to my own detriment.
And then the other piece I wanted to speak on, which is something I think we don't speak on a bit and it will ask you about, was you mentioned that when you finished the book, it was quite a full-on intense process for you. And I think sometimes we don't speak about that when you achieve a dream or a goal that you've been working towards, there can be grief or other experiences involved.
Absolutely. I was joking for like 2 years there. I was like, can you get postnatal depression from birthing a book? Actually, it was the most amazing process and writing it and being, I'd never been in a creative endeavor like that with somebody else. That was amazing for me. And the whole process of writing it was amazing. The whole process of publishing it. And then I went out and into the world with it. I had ideas about how things would happen and none of those happened. I did a couple of free talks at some libraries. We put it all out to the Auckland libraries in the city that I live in. So we did three talks and only three libraries were interested. And there's like 50 of them. So that was, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. And then I did lots of interviews and things like that. And I was just getting all this exposure, but exposure's not sales. And so then that was a little bit disheartening because I thought, oh my goodness, I'm talking to all these people and I'm doing all this stuff. So it came out at the end of 2016. So 2017, I was trying to do free author talks and stuff. And I tried a couple of markets. I think I might have done two markets, three markets that year. And it actually took so much out of me. I didn't realize it's one thing to be sitting there writing away, you know, cross-legged on your bed, it all just be a concept. But actually having it out there with people that could read it and judge it, like that was a whole other thing. And then also inviting people into my life, like I was very raw and graphic. I pulled no punches. It was like I talked about thinking that my vagina was going to be broken for the rest of my life. There were so many really intimate, raw things in there and stuff. And so it actually got to the point where I was like, I don't want anyone else to know about this. And so by 2018, I was like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I haven't. And that is my healing journey, my journey to then into and out of hell, if you will. It was still ongoing for me. Like the book had come out, but now I had this other sort of mountain to climb, and it brought up all of these other things, going down the rabbit hole and having all of these mental health issues, which, I mean, they're just normal trauma reaction. But I couldn't handle pressure. I couldn't handle stress. I couldn't look at emails. I couldn't answer the phones. And I'd done so much work that I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? I don't understand how I cannot be sorted when I have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and I have spent hundreds and hundreds of hours. And so I realized that it's layers. So I'm just constantly unpicking layers and unpicking and reweaving the fabric of my life. So I enrolled myself in the advanced shamanic studies at Medicine Woman. And that really helped me to not be discombobulated. It helped me to reaffirm who I am. It helped me to build the balance of power that I needed and to clear out the rest of the dross that was weighing me down. And there's still more things to clear out and stuff. But it was when I realized I don't know how I'm going to go forward. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm such a mess and I can't deal with the world. It really helped me get myself strong enough. It really helped me remember who I am and get my mind straight again, because my mind, it had gone to a point where all of my PTSD symptoms had returned. I couldn't handle pressure. I was having lightnings. I couldn't sleep. Again, it was completely destroying, but in a good way. But it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. And it really did turn me inside out and ferret out all of these issues that needed to be dealt with and brought up so much stuff to the surface for me to transcend and transmute. I'm so glad I did it. I may not have done that if I hadn't hit a form of rock bottom after the book came out. But in saying that, like the whole time, I still felt really great. I was so proud of myself. So I then had to grieve for all of these delusions that I had about how it should be. Empowering, but it was not at all what I thought. And so surrender. I've just been surrendering and surrendering and surrendering. And now, because I'm talking with you now, I'm ready to go, okay, let's see if I can take this book out to the world and show people how they can heal and what they can do and share my journey again.
And I think that's a piece, even regardless of what you're offering, not if it's a book, whatever, if you're doing healing, or because a lot of the people that engage with these from our end are healers, there's an idea of how things should work, or like tic-tac-toe. But especially if we're doing healing work, there's a different energetic timing. So would you say anything about that, like how to exist within both worlds? Because we do
exists.
I feel like I always have a foot in both worlds. So for me to exist, I don't feel like I really do exist out in that world. You know, like I live a very insular life, and we've had a lot of lockdowns here in Auckland over the last 2 years. But I'm not out there going to parties and doing things. Like I am happiest when I am at home or whether I'm in nature. And so they are the two things that I take with me when I have to go out into the world and do things. Ritual, things that are just for myself, things that are really special, that connect me to my source, that connect me to my soul, that connect me to my spirit. And it can be just as simple as going outside and standing on the grass for a few minutes. Or it can be a full-on proper ritual at my altar where I'm going through specific steps, doing specific things. For me, the way that I can exist in both worlds is by having my spiritual and my metaphysical world fully embraced around me. I have my spiritual cloak on me no matter where I go, and that is what helps me exist in the world. Over the last couple of years, I was involved in a web series and a domestic violence prevention and awareness web series. I guess for most people, they would just go along and do their thing. But every time that I was filming, I would spend 3 days doing rituals, like bringing up the energy, doing all of this stuff to prepare myself so that I wasn't getting triggered as I was talking to people. So that I was as pristine and clear as I could be, so that none of my stuff was spilling over. And I talked about having stuff spilling over before. And so for me, it's flower essences and ritual and nature that help me to contain myself. If I can contain myself, then I'm okay out in the world. But I spend a lot of time not with people.
And can you speak on, I don't know exactly what I'm asking, but whatever comes forth on soul retrieval? Because I really liked as well in the book where you said, and I use it now sometimes, I'll voice it to people with extending an open invitation for our soul to return. That the first time I read that was in your book, and I thought that was really cool.
What it is, we call it singing with soul back home. And I mean, soul retrieval is just one very tiny part of shamanic work, and many of them come together. But with soul retrieval, specifically for myself, well, for all of us, when a traumatic thing happens, you might hear someone say, oh, I jumped out of my skin, or I feel like I lost a part of myself. I feel like I lost a part of myself. I feel like something is missing. I've never been the same since XYZ. So with soul retrieval, we do a journey, which is like a visualization meditation exercise. And we call the lost and fragmented parts of the soul home. So the way that I do it for myself is I work with, depending on what parts I want to call home. So say I wanted to call home the traumatized parts of myself, I would work with one of the trauma essences. So number 100, Mahoe, which is in a fire. It's like the shaman's drum. It helps us raise the vibration to where we need to go. And then I would work with 101, 102, 103, which is past, present, and future, Pedo, Tree Daisy, and Native Angelica. They help us go to the past, bring it back into the present, and then take it into the future, whatever it is that we're getting. And then 104, Red Metapo, is the actual soul retrieval one. So we'd use integration as well, which is 105 Tower. So it's a nice little set. And I would take those essences prior to my journey, set my intention, take the essences. And my intention would be, I call all of the lost parts of myself home that are ready to come. And I call them home to me now to be safely integrated. And then I would wait. Before then, I would have done a journey to get my power animal and chatted with him and sorted all that out. There are many levels and layers to this. We always call the parts that are ready to come home. We don't want to fight with them. Like if they're not ready, they're not ready. Everything has to be in perfect timing. And when they start arriving, I ask them some questions. Why did you leave? What do you need to stay? How can I help you? You know, how can I help you feel safe? So with some of them, they've been little kids, they're little parts of me that have come home. And so I've welcomed them, and I've had to spend sometimes 5 or 10 minutes talking with them, saying, I understand that when you left, it was very unsafe and that you are very scared. And I understand that you weren't treated right. And I mean, just the way that you would talk to a child that needs to be consoled. I try to make them aware that they can come home now, that things are different, that I promise that will never happen again. I ask them what they need, and it might be a hug, you know, it might be a pony, whatever it is that they need to feel safe. And then I integrate them in to me. They were all women, they were all grown ups, this last lot that all came home. And they were on this beautiful, like, risen boardwalk, like, over this crystal clear reflective lake. And there was this absolutely gorgeous arch with roses all over it and things. And I was actually in the arch, like, welcoming them. And they were tricolometers. It was just so beautiful. But it's really integral for me to do this because I have, you know, I've been through so much trauma.
I'd be curious about how you see trauma forming and healing and its journey, or its whakapapa, I guess, from your experience having gone through that and both sides of it.
So the first action of trauma when it happens to us, you mean? Yeah. So in the first instance, when something happens to us, it comes into our energy field. So even if it hasn't come into our, even if it has come to our physical body, but before that, it comes into our energy field and things get stuck there, things get trapped there. So when something, say verbal abuse, say you are verbally abused at school or at home or something like that, and it's never dealt with, so then you carry that. So that goes into your energy field. And then because our energy field is magnetic, it starts to, we may start to attract that sort of energy to us because it's already stuck in our energy field. So that's why it's so important to clear our energy. You know, we call it aura clearing, because trauma gets stuck in our energy field. Now, if we haven't cleared that out of our energy field, it's then going to come into our energy centers. So into our physical body. I mean, it's our metaphysical body. But so that is into our chakras, and we'll just go with the basic seven to start with. Then they settle into our cellular consciousness. Every cell, the trillions of cells in our body, they take on that trauma as well. It's carried in the water, and we're water. Once it's come in to our energy centers, if it doesn't get cleared out of that, then that causes blocks, that causes stress. It skews our view of the world and ourselves. And that, I think, is the most important thing. It skews our view of ourselves. So then we start feeling like we're a victim, or we don't feel good enough. We've had this trauma put on us so much, and now we believe it. If we don't get it out of our energy centers, then it's going to go into our energetic DNA. So then that's when we start carrying our trauma through to our children and through our DNA line. And of course, the trauma from our ancestors has already come through to us through our energetic DNA. And then as well as that, it comes with all of the fears. So we get our fears that have come through the generations. It just constantly impacts us. We don't realize that all of this is invisible. All of this is in us, and we carry it with us, but we don't see it necessarily, or even acknowledge it. We may have blacked out that experience that caused the trauma in the first place, or we may have been living in such unsafety that our entire life was filled with many, many, many different traumatic events that have just sort of stuck in everywhere. And then we're in patterns and cycles of trauma and abuse that seem really hard to get out of. So coming back to the aura, that's when we work on aura cleansing. We go through all of the layers of the aura and cleanse that out. I think the modern medical model is so in a box for trauma. They're like, you have to have this, 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 and this. Otherwise, you don't qualify for this diagnosis, you know. And so that's why I much prefer a holistic approach to it. It's looking at the whole person and not trying to squeeze people into pre-existing boxes. There are seven fundamental human traumas that we go through. The first one is physical trauma. And with the flower essences, they have a specific trauma kit, which is the ferns. And ferns are known as the skin of the earth. It keeps us safe, if you will. And so the first trauma essence is number 37, king fern. And that helps us to clear out physical trauma. So that, for me, that was quite a big one. I used a lot of that when I was working through clearing out my trauma. Any accidents for any incidents or attacks, in my case, for abandonment, for anything that impacts us on a physical level, king fern helps to clear that out. And then the next fundamental trauma that humans can go through is emotional/sexual, and that is tied in the second band of power, which is at a sacral level. Hiwi's boundaries, it's number 38, and it's rasp fern. That is where we store trauma from any emotional abuse that's happened, especially with codependency and things like that in families, a lot of familial abuse, and also any sexual abuse, whether it was actually sexual assault, whether it was sexual harassment, whether it was just made to feel unsafe. And then the next fundamental trauma that humans go through is disempowerment. And we have a flowery sense for that, which is number 39, and that is shaking back then. Here is empowerment. I'm actually going through a process at the moment of reworking with that particular layer of trauma, with the empowerment and disempowerment, and it correlates to the solar plexus chakra and then to the DNA. It is all about non-judgment, you know, not judging yourself, not judging other people. After their empowerment trauma, we have heartfelt trauma. So that's things like betrayal, again, abandonment, anything that hurts you in your heart, that is a deeply wounding heartbreak, breaking up of relationships, that sort of thing. And then, and that is 40, which is silver fern, and we'll trauma kit for that. The next one, which I've taken today, is for this. I took all of the layers for the throat chakra, for everything. So we could just speak the truth and have everything that needed to come home. That is 41, and that was Prince of Wales fern. And that is the key word of respect, and that is for the bands of power around speaking your truth, speaking up, and around the throat chakra. And so the trauma around that is healing, and is to be able to heal ourselves. It's about having respect for ourselves, having respect for others, having respect for everything. And so that's for all the times that we've been disrespected, for every single time that someone didn't respect our boundaries, for someone that didn't respect our feelings, for any time that we were disrespected. The thing with trauma is it doesn't have to be like the big, big, crazy traumas, you know. I worked through it now, but I had a teacher tell me some stuff in primary school that deeply wounded me, and I held on to it. And it was only in the last few years that I went, oh my goodness, I need to release it. I was holding on to this thing that this person, this relief teacher, had told me when I was like 7 or 8. Our woundings, you can't judge someone else. You never know what's going to wound someone. Two siblings could go through a divorce, and one it will be fine, and the other, it will impact them traumatically for the rest of their life. And the next is star fern. And it is authenticity. So that is like the gaslighting issues. That's when our reality has been negated, when people have told us, or the fundamental trauma for that is when people have negated our reality, when people have told us that what we know to be true is not true. When we're like, oh, this happened to me. Like, for a really good example is when I was in an abusive relationship, you know, I would get beaten up, which happens, you know, rather frequently. But in the aftermath of it, I would be told, but I would never hurt you. I love you so much. I would never hurt you. I couldn't hurt you and sort of things. So then that's going on in my mind, going, I couldn't hurt me. Oh, really? I'm not hurt. It made me doubt myself completely, that I knew, you know, the things that I knew to be true, I was constantly being told were not true. So then it made me doubt my mind, my ability to judge things, my ability to understand what was going on. And then the last fundamental trauma that humans go through is spiritual trauma. So, for instance, my beautiful, beautiful Nana is religious. And when I was a little girl, I was very off of the fairies. I was talking to apple tree fairies in her garden. I was talking to plants. I was seeing things and feeling things and just really, I was total little nature sprite. And I went to my Nana one time and told her about this amazing conversation that I had had with the fairies in her garden. And she told me, stop talking nonsense. That's all lies. And if anything ever talks to us, the devil. And I was like, I don't want to talk to the devil. And from that moment on, I stopped connecting in the way that had been so natural to me. And then on the other side of it, people that have been indoctrinated into a specific religion, when they know it's not for them, but their parents have said, well, you have to come, you have to do this. So spiritual trauma. Also the other trauma, that is spiritual trauma, is not knowing, feeling forsaken, not feeling like you can connect or you are connected. And that is 43 and the Kiwi Tritters direction, and that is Plume Canadian Head there. Those main fern essences, like I took them for years, years and years and years, trying to clear out all of the trauma so that I could get to a point where, of course, I can't take it away. I can't change the past. Like the stuff that happened to me happens to me. Like I'm not making this up, it actually really happened. But I can't live in a place where I'm constantly in fear or in the fear that I was back then. And for a while I was, because it was very traumatic and I was very fearful and very shameful. So the first Black Flower essences, trauma kit from the fern essences, were my biggest allies with that at the beginning of my journey. As I progressed, I moved more into the master teacher plants and the healer essences and the shamanic essences. But to start with, the fern allies were my rock. They were the things that helped me be able to clear out the trauma energetically out of myself so that I could actually take all of the next steps that I needed to do. And so I'm working with a client that has been through trauma. I'm not all about, you don't have to tell me every single thing that came on. Like, we don't even have to talk about it in the micro. We can just talk about it in a very abstract terms, and I can still help clearing all of that out. You know, I know a lot of people, when they go to therapy, they just talk through it, and so they just rehash it and rehash it and rehash it and rehash it. And that, to me, was never helpful for myself.
So what's your view on what that rehashing does to the energetic and the nervous system or the energy?
It just gets it stuck in there because we're re-triggering ourselves, you know. Triggers personally, because they help me to identify where I need help. Also, if I'm getting triggered every day, well, then that's when I know that I've got some issues. Where do you need healing?
I've been curious about, because I really feel similar to what you said about the medical model and things being, you're having to have a holistic perspective, different things work at different phases of your healing journey. Well, I'm not saying, oh, you know, Rumi Rumi is that answer, but it can be a really powerful tool within your journey, and the same for flower essences and all the work everyone does, because it's not we don't just heal, like it's taken a lifetime to build up these aspects.
Yes, and I am on a lifelong healing journey. That's the thing. When you are healing from trauma, it's not just, okay, I'm going to take these essences for a month or 6 months and I'm going to be 100% fixed. Like, it doesn't work like that. There are so many layers that come on and so many hidden depths, if you will, that it is a lifelong journey. But I have the skills, I have the tools, I have the support that I need and the capacity to be able to identify what's going on with me and then also with other people. So I'm constantly using my own skills to help myself. And I realized the other day, I mean, I haven't had a personal healing by someone else that's not me in like 3 or 4 years. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, because, you know, I think it's really important that we do go to other healers and other modalities.
It's the texture of the timing though, eh? Because some things we're meant to process on our own, or it's that time, like I know through times where I'm like, I don't want anyone else in my energy field at all. I need to deal with this. Like, yes, I'm triggered, but, or yes, something's coming up, but it's my, like, I know that. Whereas other times it's like, I've been working with this and working with this and working with this and just touching base, putting it out to the universe, like asking, where should I go with it?
That's how I live, just surrendering it. Like, I surrender every desire that I have. I surrender all my answers. I have some family things going on at the moment, and it knocked me for six for a bit. And I was trying to like take care of all these things and sort all the stuff out. And I was sort of running myself ragged. And it was like, oh, actually, I just need to sit and have a conversation with spirit about this. I need help. I don't know what to do. Spirit, please give me the guidance that I need. Help me see clearly. And peace comes with that for me, you know. And so out of everything, my spiritual connection, my connection to source, and this is the thing, if we go back to Plumed Maiden Hair Fern number 43, or spiritual direction, we're told, or rather modern religions are told, that you have to have an intermediary. There's a priest or a pastor or someone that connects you to God or goddess or spirit or whatever it is that you want to say. I think it's so important for each and every individual to know, no, you don't need anyone else. Like, you connect in with yourself. And so that's one of the things that I try and teach people that come into my orbit is to start with, to just to be able to connect with themselves. And it is a practice. It's not, you know, we're not all great at it all the time.
Yeah. And the thing that was coming up for me, which I've been really curious about, I know it's a simple answer in spirit world, but sometimes in human world, I really grapple with that relationship between like a passive and an active role in our own, both our own healing, but also surrender. This idea of visioning, and similar to what you're saying about your book or about feeling that empowerment now and coming more out. How much of it is that like active visioning and creation and doing, and how much of it is literally the surrender and just follow? Because I would say I tend more towards the wait for things to come to me and then follow. And once that goes, I'll run with it. But I'm not actively energetically out often. But then that's not what the world is telling us we should do. So sometimes I get confused. So I'd love to hear your view on that.
The same with my course, you know, like part of it is very passive. So I'm like, well, if I'm meant to be there, I will be. And but also the thing is with that, because it's a really good example, is of non-grasping. I really want to be there and I will do this course. Like, I will. It might not be tomorrow, you know, it might not be this year, but I will do this course. So it doesn't matter if I'm not there tomorrow. But then the other half of it was like, well, if I was really manifesting, then I should have gone out and done all these things and made it happen. But I couldn't see a way to make it happen. So I didn't.
And it's not always a good use of our life force to make something happen. My life force doesn't feel like, I only want to do things that my life force fit. My body feels nourished by, like, even though it'll be nourished by the outcome. I don't even want to do the things on the way there that don't nourish me. Most of the things that I do nourish me. But I'd love to hear about boundaries because I'm always working on them. I feel like some people probably think I have good ones and some people are like, you have none, depending on how they're interacting with me.
Same. Yeah, because I have really strong boundaries, which I didn't sure ever. Like the first 27 years of my life, there were no boundaries. I wasn't raised to have boundaries. I wasn't allowed to have boundaries. And that carried through into my relationships. Yeah. So I have really good boundaries now, but there are still things that slip through. There are people on Facebook that they're not necessarily friends of mine, but we're Facebook friends. And some of them have a lot of issues and they bring those issues to me, not as me or their client, but because they would appreciate my input. It's like, no, I owe you nothing. That was a really important thing for me because after the book came out and I had spoken publicly and I started in 2014 before the book came out, I was a survivor spokesperson for Women's Refuge New Zealand. And I did it for 2 years. It was actually really stressful and quite hard on me, even though it wasn't often. And so one of my boundaries again was like, actually, I can't do that. But because I had been out doing that and then I put the book out, it actually seemed like the energy coming at me was of entitlement. Like everyone all of a sudden felt entitled to me, entitled to my story, entitled to my time. And that was one of the things that actually started to mess me up, because all of a sudden it was like I wasn't a private individual person. All of a sudden it was just like apparently the world owned me and I owed my time to everybody. If someone wanted to interview me, then I had to interview with them. It really felt like the whole world disrespected me and just wanted to use me. So that was another one of the contributing factors.
That's so interesting because I can't remember when it was after we'd been chatting, because we weren't chatting a lot, but just every once in a while. We'd exchange something. It was normally about shamanic theatre. And I remember I had a memory one time after we'd exchanged a message of seeing your face in Women's Day. It was just random. Like it just popped in after we'd chat. And then I was really sitting with that. There is a weird thing about that separation of something being on. I think it's a bit different now because the world's a bit different. But especially at that time, that separation of like, here's something tangible that's separate from me.
Yes. And it was like, yeah, at the beginning, right? I was like, I am my book and this. And it's like, no, I'm not my book. That is not me. So then if people are criticizing it, it's like they're criticizing the book. They're not actually criticizing me, although they were as well. But it was, I really had to separate myself out because as I was writing it, I was like, I am my book. Like, I am my brand. And but I'm not. Yeah. Like, I am what I am and that is it. I'm not trying to be anything else. And I don't think of myself as anything. All of the labels that I used to have are gone. I'm a human having a spiritual experience.
That separation, I think, is also alongside the trauma piece, it's an ongoing process if we're working in this field as well. I'm speaking for myself, but doing Māori healing, there's a collective aspect as well. So there's some degree of people feeling that they own the Māori healing aspect. But then there's also this bit of like, sometimes it helps me to think, oh, this is just a role, I'm just a practitioner. And then other time that feels really disconnected and I'm not integrated because I actually lived this whole life all the time. But I'm also not having a label. It's very confusing.
I know that as well. Like no matter where, I mean, and I said I didn't have a label, but if we use a label as medicine woman, no matter where I am and what I'm going through or what someone else is going through, that is always a part of me that cannot be taken away. It cannot be split away from me because it is integrated into my soul. It's part of who I am. Clinically has really helped me with that. I remember saying, I just want to be able to learn how to use the shamanic talent that I have. And actually, I want to be able to have the knowledge and actually do it, you know, be it. Then, of course, the medicine woman school was opened to the rest of us. And I got to, you know, and there are many people around the world, you know, and there are so many ideals of what a shaman is and what shamanic practitioner is about the rites of passage that you have to go through and things and about being able to call yourself. And I don't call myself one, although I have the skills and the abilities. I have literally been dismembered and remembered, getting dropped
out. Manifestation of that.
Fast track shamanic thing that you can do. On top of all of the other 48 rites of passage that I've been through so far, it is an integral part of me, and it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks of me. It doesn't matter if anyone else negates my reality or tries to negate my reality or tell me that I'm not what I am, because their opinions and ideas don't matter because I am exactly who I am. And like I said earlier, you know, my people know that.
It's so beautiful. I love that. I always said the integration for me is like a walking prayer. That would be the label I wouldn't mind having, because it's like, I'm just, whatever happens, it's like walking, walking.
So that actually reminds me, one of the things that I do to align myself is medicine songs. Most of them I learned at Medicine Woman, you know, and were gifted to us there, and some of them I have come across myself. One of the main ones that I've been working with these last 2 years is Walking in Beauty. May I walk in beauty every day. May I walk in beauty in a sacred way. I try to embody that everywhere I go, whether I'm at the supermarket, whether I'm at the gas station, whether I'm at the beach, whether I'm in the forest, to walk in beauty, to actually have reverence for myself and for everything that exists. I'm a work in progress on my walking in beauty. But yeah, that medicine woman songs are, medicine songs are a big part of what I do for myself, to connect in and to connect with my tribe, with our waka and with my ancestors, our medicine circle. That's a really beautiful and sacred way that I connect. It uplifts me. It uplifts my spirit and it connects me to nature. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. Oh, yeah. Going and going and going and emptying, like draining black, tar, icky things out of myself, you know, pulling barbs and fish hooks. And it's visualization, but it's very real. And for me, it's been very necessary. Like, this is the way that I have been able to heal myself.
Thank you so much for everything you've shared. I feel honored.
Thanks. You're so welcome. Thank you, Claridge. I feel honored. We've been talking about this for a while, and I feel so honored and grateful that you read my book and took the time to read it and that you found value in it. Like, that to me is more important than anything, is that people can find the intrinsic value in it, that it can actually, even if it's nothing to do with their experiences, there's still some value in it for them. And that makes my heart happy.
Thank you. Is there anything else on your heart to share at all before I ask you to call?
The only other thing that we haven't really touched on is I live in gratitude. I am so grateful for the life that I have. I'm so grateful for the body that I have. I don't measure my body on how it looks. I measure my body on how it works, you know, and it does, you know, I live in a disabled body 24/7. I can't get away from that. I am classed as disabled. And for so long, I was so ableist. Is that the word? The ableism around me and in the world had made me feel like I couldn't call myself disabled, and that being disabled was a bad thing, you know? And while I wouldn't recommend becoming disabled the way that I became disabled, like, this is my body.
But I would definitely do not recommend that.
I recommend that ever. Yeah. If you ever see a red flag, if you are with a person in a relationship and they push past your boundaries, they don't respect your views, they make fun of your dreams, get out now. Get the fuck out.
Thank you so much, Simone. I honestly grateful. Would you mind doing a prayer or a song or whatever if it comes through to you to close us off?
I give thanks to the four directions. I give thanks to the elements. I give thanks to the earth, to the air, to the water, and to the fire. I give thanks to all of our ancestors that stand strong with us and behind us. I give thanks to the plant allies all throughout the world, our brothers and sisters that are growing in the air. And I give thanks to the element of air, which has helped us with our open communication today. The element of air, I give thanks as my overlighting element for this year and for our talk. I'm just so, so grateful to be part of this with you, Gabrielle. I'm full of gratitude.